Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. This week we have part two of our interview with Mary O'Connor, where she discusses life after her intercounty career, becoming a key figure in women in sport, and how she rose up through the ranks to become CEO of Federation of Irish Sport and create the 20 by 20 initiative.
I suppose, you know, actually what I always find really interesting is that when you go through like Cork, Pope, Camogie football records, like you kind of look at them and you're like, you know, geez, they're tearing up like around them. But like, not that you weren't, but like that Dublin game now was like 1 point, 2006 Tipperary was a hard game. You know, there was a lot of games in between where like it was tough going, like competition was high, contrary to the fact that you were just cleaning up like around you. That was obviously healthy as well for the growth of the game, because like what, 2003-04 was when TG Cahir started like broadcasting and things like that. So for the like the good games to be on, that made such a difference, I suppose, like to show.
Yeah, definitely. And TG Cahir has been great for Leys football, and I've gone on record as saying that, you know, for the most part up until the last maybe 3 or 4 years, Camogie matches, you'd probably only get to see one full live game a year, and that was the All-Ireland final. And if that happened to be a bad game, then people's perception of Camogie was based on that one match. Whereas what TG Cahir did is they were showing All-Ireland quarterfinals, semi-finals, finals and national leagues. And that has grown since. I think they're covering nearly 25 adult championship matches a year now, and that exposure speaks wonderful for the game because people want to get involved then. But it became very competitive. It's evolving all the time, Leys football. It's such a super fast game now. I remember being at the All-Ireland final last year and my sister Helen was playing with Inch in the Gaelic for Mothers at half time, and she scored a point in Croke Park. I'd say she nearly scored as much as I did in Croke Park. But and that was a fantastic occasion for her. But I remember watching the second half and I was like, Dublin in particular, their transition from defence to attack was lightning speed. And it was just the way, such, they're such athletes now. And it was great to actually watch and say, geez, thank God I'm not out there now, because I'd be the tongue would be hanging out of me. But the game is evolving all the time and it's great.
Even like Camogie, like we're seeing now, it's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of debate at the moment because, you know, as strength and conditioning is kind of growing, as we're all kind of getting tougher and fitter and things like that. Like, are you one of those people that firmly believes that Camogie kind of, not, it's not that it needs to evolve for the times, but it needs to, I suppose, catch up in a way to be, because Camogie, like, and like hurling, it could be one of the greatest sports to ever exist. But like everything, you're going to be hitting each other. Should, like, you just kind of, you don't want to be belting each other, but, you know, should you just accept it?
No, I think the issue with the Camogie is that the players have evolved faster than the rules have. If you look at the way some of the rules are wrote and the referees will referee according to the rules, I think that's a big problem. I also think that SNC has come into Camogie majorly, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but in Camogie, unlike the men's games, you know, you can have very young girls playing against adult women, and if you bring in too much of that SNC into the actual game in terms of shouldering and so on, it then does, you know, you do look at it, well, would it be an attractive sport for young girls to play? So I just think they need to look at the age cohorts of what girls are playing. And like, you know, if I was playing, say, in my 20s and I was playing up, coming up against my niece who now is 15 and is able to play adult Camogie, I mean, it wouldn't be a fair contest. And you've got inter-county Camogie players who are doing brilliant S&C programmes and they're coming back to play club games. So I just think we need to look at it. I do think that the Camogie rules need to change. I do think that the way the Camogie is refereed needs to change. But I think there just needs to be conversations between players and the rule makers and so on. And, you know, I think people who are looking after Camogie now are open to that, and I'm hoping that change will come because it is a fantastic game. I don't want to see the skill go out of it because it's such a skillful game. I think there's 126 skills in the game of Camogie and hurling. And, you know, we want our players to be sufficient at their skill set first before you look at the S&C side of the house.
I always like feel bad because like you see hurling and like an RT, like the greatest game to ever exist, you know, the eighth wonder of the world. And like Camogie is like literally the exact same sport, but it's still like you're still kind of clicking your fingers going, come on. Yeah. Please, like, come
even
on,
the uniform, up. Like, you know, it's just even the uniform in terms of the skirt and notices to be able to skirt and the shorts. And I'm not saying I'm far short, but what I'm saying is the skirt sometimes it's like dating back 20, 30 years ago. It's just, you know, perception will be looked at in terms of how the game is perceived by people who are not involved in it. And I think, you know, I would hate for people to perceive Camogie in a different light to hurling because of actually the rules. I think that's, for me, it's just like, it's a fantastic game. It is one of the fastest field games in the world for women. It's our indigenous sport, a sport I was very proud to have played, and I loved all the skills of it. Even now, if I go out with my friends and if I go on holidays abroad, I bring the hurlies and go for a puck around, because it's just that thrill of striking a ball and controlling it and striking it back. And I remember being on a beach in Mallorca a few years back with my friend, and we were pucking around, and this young fella was watching us for 10 minutes. And he came over and he had a thick English accent. He goes, "Wow, you're really good." And it was just kind of like, you know, trying to show him the skills then, like, because people are enthralled by a piece of wood and, you know, the ball and so on. So, look, it's such a fantastic game, and it had given me such joy in my life. I just would love so many more girls in Ireland to get that opportunity to play it in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I remember my my niece, she's 9 now, and I remember she was like picked for like under sixes, and she was like having a whale of a time. She was like, "This is the best thing ever." But I remember, like, no offense to her, but I remember my mommy was saying, like, she hasn't an athletic bone in her body, but like, fair play to her for trying. And I remember she, like, she called it a day in under 8, like, she was like, "I'm retiring from, like, you know, from like my club level." And I was like, "That's great, Kylie, you know, how come you're retiring?" And I remember she said it was the scarred, and then my mother was like, "It's because she's really bad." And then we all had to like look at her and be like, "You're very good, Kylie. Like, at least you tried. Like, well done." I suppose actually, like, what I find mind blowing is that 2010, you may have called it a day, but you're still as involved, like, if not more so, like, in the admin side more than anything now. Like, 2010, I suppose you may have been off the field and you, like, went away to America and had your 3-week break, and, you know, like, you were honored with like so many different things, like, but you're still there. Like,
yeah. Well, 2010, what happened in 2010 was, we had one weekend, I think it was in August, where my whole inter-county world just got blown up, in the sense that we played Tyrone in the All-Ireland quarter-final up in Offaly. We got beaten. I think we ended up having 2 cruciates on the day on the team. We just malfunctioned. Tyrone beat us. They went on to the All-Ireland final, but were well beaten by Dublin. And then the following day, I had to play the All-Ireland Camogie semi-final replay. Against Galway in Simple Stadium.
The first one was the thriller, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then up in Nolan Park the first day, we drew. We should have won that day. I'm still annoyed over that. And then the day after we were beaten by Tyrone, I had to get my head right as Adrina and Bridget to try and go out and play against Galway in the All-Ireland semi-final replay in Turles. And we were just overran. And when that final whistle went in Turles, I knew myself that it wasn't that I wasn't, you know, able anymore. I just wasn't as motivated. And if you're not motivated and committed by even 1% less than you were. And I remember having a very good conversation with one of my best friends, Tommy Seward, who's a true GA Gael in Cork. He goes to so many matches, but, and he was bringing me to all my games. And I remember having the conversation. He just said to me, "Mal," he said, "when there's a doubt, there's no doubt." And that stuck with me throughout. And actually in 2010, that winter, we had been beaten in the football. Inch went on to win the Club All-Ireland. That was one of my most, you know, abiding memories of that year. Yeah, I had a horrible inter-county year, but to win a Club All-Ireland with Inch Ladies Football Club, it was great, because I had obviously won 2 with Dunmore and they were brilliant. But to come back home to where you're from and where you learnt your trade, it was great. And then in 2011, Eamon Ryan gave me a ring in March, because I told him I wasn't playing the National League, and he was very patient with me, and I just said, "No, Eamon, I'm done." I knew myself the Camogie was done, because if you're back in Camogie, you get found out very lively if the legs were gone. So it was a hard thing to say to Eamon, "Yeah, look, I'm gone." And I did miss it terribly for the first 3 or 4 years, absolutely did.
Was this a routine that you were like 6 days a week for like 17, 18 years?
Yeah,
like,
and very much that I identified with it. I had all my value on myself because of sport. And, you know, I had a lot of growing up to do in that sense as well, that I wasn't going to be defined by my sport, but when I had been. And then obviously I was still working for the Camogie Association because I love the game. Got to work as CEO of the Camogie for 16 months in 2013. Really enjoyed that time as well. It was difficult, steep learning curve. But I do have the greatest respect for anybody who's trying to organise, formalise sport in Ireland, because it's difficult. There's a huge, diverse group of people you're trying to satisfy when you're trying to run fixtures, run the games according to rules and so on as well.
Even like in Cork alone, like the 5 like main sports or whatever, like the camogies, the footballs, you know, the hurlings, the rugby and the soccer, like you have to deal with that alone in Cork. Like, you know, I always joke, like whenever I go back to Kerry, I'm like, at least you only have football, you know, to deal with. They're like, shut up, Joanne.
No, it's true though, like, because it's a mammoth task in terms of, you look at one sport, all the fixtures, all the different grades within the age levels, you know, and then you've got the discipline side of the house, and you've got the insurance side of the house. It's just, it's a big business now, sport in Ireland, and, you know, all the volunteers that organise club level, you know, they have my utmost respect, you know.
Yeah, I suppose that then like transcends your role now of CEO of Federation of Irish Sport. Like, and I was laughing because I was like reading like how many people you're in charge of, and I was like, I'm in charge of myself and I'm having like chronic breakdowns. It's like 74 national governing bodies, 26 local partnerships, but that's 12,000 clubs at the same time. Like, and you were like, looking at your Twitter, you're like at UEFA, you're like organizing like different things. Like, it, especially this week was a busy week because Women in Sport policy just came out there for Sport Ireland. Yeah. So that's it's happening. Like, it's a big thing. Like, you know, this, like last year in my head, I was like, this is the year for learning new sports because I was learning about hockey.
Yeah.
Now I'm learning about like pentathlon, you know, like all the different things in between. But like, yeah. Do you see a huge growth, like an explosion, I suppose, in a way? Or are you still like kind of sitting there going, it's still, you're clicking your fingers going, come on.
Yeah,
you know.
I think the Federation of Irish Sport, not to be confused with Sport Ireland, Sport Ireland are the statutory body from the Irish government. Federation of Irish Sport are an advocacy and representative body that try and advocate for sports to be resourced more, to be funded more. And one part of my role last year was try and increase the budget for sport in Ireland. And thankfully, that was increased by, I think it was 11% last year. And we're going to be looking for more funding for next year. But if you look in Ireland, there's 75 national governing bodies who are members of us, of the Federation of Irish Sport. Some of them are, you know, really niche and emerging sports. They might have one staff member. They might have no staff member, that they might be ran entirely by volunteers. And what I like about those sport is that they exist now all over the country. When I was growing up in the 80s, it was Gaelic Games or it was nothing. And I was very lucky to have the GA Club in Killa and the Camogie Club in Killa, because that's where I found my love for sport. But now if I was growing up in Killa, 10 minutes either side of me, I have rugby, I have soccer, I'd have tennis, I'd have basketball, I have badminton. And that's fantastic because that gives people an opportunity to play different sports, because not everybody's going to want to play a team sport, not everybody's going to want to play a contact sport. So what our sports are doing now in the country is giving people an opportunity to try sports that might suit them, that might be appropriate for them. So like the return on investment that the government gets from sport is mammoth. And the last time there was an economic value put and done was by Indycon in 2010. But, you know, the value of sport, not just physically and the emotional well-being of it, but obviously the return to the economy and societal value in terms of that community spirit. I mean, just a sport exists in every community in the country. Obviously, because Gaelic Games is our indigenous sport, that's the most prevalent, and then followed by rugby and soccer. But there's so much opportunity there now, and both men and women, we want to try and give girls and women the opportunity, and men, to take these sports and try these sports and find one they love, because the niche and emerging sports are the sports where we have all the world champions, the European champions, the Olympic medalists. It's those sports, you know?
Yeah, because even like last year alone, like when I was writing an article for the Irish Times, like we were basically saying like that 2018 was like the big year for women in sport. Like, so when I got that job originally, it was 2017. And I remember I had to like go through Google searches to like get information, you know, just to fill the article or whatever. But like last year alone, we had like 20 by 20, which I know you're a part of as well. And I remember at the end of the year, we calculated that 44 medals were won by female athletes, and seven others in on top of that were actually mixed, which was out of 77 medals in total.
Yeah.
I remember like reading then, because like just 2 days or yesterday even, the 8th of March, the US women's national team, they filed a gender discrimination, basically saying like, we're clearly winning and you're not giving us, you know, what we have to do. I'm not saying like, is it the same in Ireland? Because Ireland's obviously much smaller population size and things like that. And I think we have to be careful not to be like, let's be like the UK, because like population wise, we can't. But we're still producing like such like great memories and such great moments. Like, is it not tricky, but I suppose you're going back to government all the time seeing like, see, this is what we're doing with such little stuff. Imagine if you gave us, you know, just like 1% more. Is that?
Yeah, it is tricky because we're in the same pot as housing and health, you know, so you have to be, you know, you have to be understanding of that. And the Federation, obviously, we would advocate for both men and women's sports, but there is definitely a correlation between success at international or national level and how that transcends into inspiring the next generation to take up sport. Like, you could see the, you know, the uptake of boxing in Ireland for women when Katie Taylor was women. You can see the reaction to rugby when the Irish rugby team are going well. So we have an obesity epidemic in this country. We have a sedentary lifestyle in this country. And what we're saying is, if you fund programs and people in sport, not just infrastructure. Yes, we need the facilities, but we also need programs and people to be resourced and funded and enabled to actually carry out this work. So it's a fine balance, but we're trying to go after multi-annual funding. So if a national governing body of gets funding that they can plan over a 2-year period, not just depending on, well, I don't know what funding I'm going to get for next year. It helps them be more strategic and make more of an impact on the ground. You know, in sports, there was a national sports policy launched last July, which was the first ever national sports policy for Ireland. And like, that's amazing that we've never had one before when we're such a sports mad country.
Yeah.
And there's gradients in that policy. At the moment, there's a 4.5% difference between men and women participating in sports. So they want to try and eradicate that gradient by 2027. But there's other gradients like ethnic minorities, people with disabilities, socioeconomic, you know, so there's loads of gradients that they want to try and tackle, but it's about having a collective effort and a collaborative effort, not just through the Department of Sport, but the Department of Health, Department of Education, Department of Youth and Young People. So there's loads in it. And just recently, the Department of Development and Rural Affairs had a call for input for a volunteer strategy. And that's massive.
Yeah.
Because volunteering in Ireland is how sport works. And there was research done by Sport Ireland in 2017. 450,000 people in Ireland, adults, on a weekly basis volunteer for sport. And they dedicate 3.5 hours per week. So if you ask the government to actually repay that through the Exchequer, you know, they'd be more than the European Union coming out trying to bail us out. That's massive what our volunteers are doing. And it's actually about recognising their work, but also supporting them. And the Federation of Irish Sport, actually, this year in October, are going to be re-establishing the Volunteer and Sports Awards, because we strongly believe that our volunteers need to be recognised and need to be supported and resourced to do their jobs as volunteers.
But even like as sport grows, like, I mean, it's no longer like take, you know, a bunch of girls out into a pitch and kick a ball for a little bit. Like, there's more to it now. Like, you've got your drills, you've got what food you need to eat, you know, strength and conditioning, like everything between. And like, we're all, I've always said, like, Ireland is the best country, like, for volunteers. Like, we rely solely on volunteers to fix like loads of different problems. We're like, Ireland's like finger in the dam, like 90% of the time.
Absolutely. And like, if you want to volunteer for sport now, there's so many things you must comply with. Yeah. So you must obviously your vetting, which is very important. You have to do a coaching course. You have to do a safeguarding course. And that's just for the coaches. And then the administrators have to look after the insurance, the registration, and public liability, the risk. It's massive now. And it's like, for some volunteers, it's like a second full-time job. Mm. And if we don't recognise them and value them, we're going to lose them. And there's a cohort of volunteers, I think, that are exiting this system because of they've been involved for so long. We need to educate the next generation that you must take up the mantle, or else organised sport in Ireland will be under pressure to actually continue going.
Do you think it's like even tougher for like a women in sport environment because you've such a small pool in general you're pulling from? Like, I see like one of our local girls, she plays with Cork, and she's running, I think, 3 cool camps in total. And I, like, not that I know for a fact, like, I know that her male counterpart is only doing like the military one. He's like, oh, I'm too busy like for the rest. Do you think it's even harder from a women in sport perspective?
Yeah, I think, and I've said this before, I think women in sport are, in terms of organised sport in Ireland, formalised sport, is in its infancy. And women, by their very nature, you know, they want to prove themselves and work harder, and sometimes they go above and beyond, actually, to get that recognition or even to do the work that they do. But I think it's about getting a balance, and I think it's about each individual woman and man taking responsibility for what they can do. You know, I understand that people are so busy now, and I think, you know, it's actually time to say, well, I want to be part of the change, and this is how I'm going to do my little bit, you know, and we all have a part to play. And I think it's important that we recognise that, you know, we need to work together as well.
Like, building off that, like, yesterday was International Women's Day, and I was tired, man, looking at Twitter and seeing hashtag show your stripes. I was like flicking through and I was like, man, everyone's really like showing their stripes. And that's a massive initiative. Like, 20 by 20 was, it's huge. Like, and I mean, as I remember I said to my brother, and he's like a sports loser. Like, he'll just watch anything for the sake of watching it. I remember like I read to him like the list of things that like, you know, you wanted to do. And I was like, do you think it's possible? And I wasn't asking in like an arrogant way, but I was just wondering his perspective. And he was like, sure, anything is possible. And he walked out the door and I was like my brother, like the secret feminist in the corner, but like it is a big initiative and it's a big thing to undertake. But you know, I suppose in a way, you know, we have the Olympics coming up, we have everything coming up now. It's time to kind of pool together, you know, to promote.
Yeah, 20 by 20 essentially is three pillars. It's trying to increase media coverage of women in sport by 20% by 2020, increase participation in women's sports and physical activity by 20% by 2020. And participation is not just the playing of it, it's refereeing, it's coaching, it's judging, it's umpiring, it's administration, and then 20% increase in attendances at female games and events as well. And like those targets, I think we'll smash them because we're operating at such a low level. We launched in October 2018 and so 5 months on we're going into the next phase. The first phase was kind of creating an awareness of the campaign, and this phase is actually about people showing their stripes and saying, well, what are you going to do to be part of the change? How are you going to change your attitude? Because there is an unconscious bias to women and girls in sport in Ireland, and sometimes women nearly need to overachieve or over excel to get recognised. So for instance, Cork Ladies football team, you know, you nearly had to win five in a row before you were being recognised as being special, whereas maybe in the men's game, if they won one, they'd be recognised as being special. Like the, look at the hockey team last year, the ladies hockey, what they achieved, but you know, how everybody became engrossed in their success story. So it's a huge campaign, but it's a not-for-profit campaign. We're getting no government funding for it. It's very much being, I suppose, done by goodwill in an awful lot of cases. So at the moment, we have 65 national governing bodies of sport and local sport partnerships involved in the campaign. It's been made possible by five brilliant sponsors, Lidl, Investec, KPMG, Tree and AIG. And then we have media partners, and that's the beauty of it. The media partners are Off the Ball, RTE Sports and joeher.ie. And even like if RT Sport yesterday, they had their broadcasters actually pledging and they tweeted it out last night. And it was just fantastic to see all the different presenters in RT pledging their support for this campaign. And that's huge because we want people to see that they all can do something. It doesn't have to be a massive change, but if we all pledge to do something, then there can be that culture shift. And like that's, I think, the big thing that needs to happen in Ireland is that culture shift. That stimulate the conversation. Let's have these conversations, but give people an opportunity to participate in sport the way I had that meaningful opportunity. And it doesn't make a difference about your talent for it. It's actually about the fun, the enjoyment, the social bit, because that's coming out a lot now in terms of sport being a social prescriber for people's emotional well-being, whether you want to be, you know, participate in it or to administrate in it. And look, the campaign has so many different facets to it. But we've been delighted with it from a Federation of Irish Sport point of view, who've helped develop it and present it, along with Sarah and Heather, whose concept it is. It's going to get bigger and better. It will culminate in October 2020, post-Olympics. 2019 is a huge year in terms of a lot of the people can qualify for the Olympics. So it's exciting times.
It's definitely like really fun. I remember I was saying it to, I think it was either Sarah or Heather, one of the two, at an award ceremony, that like I've been involved in loads of campaigns from the disability point of view, and the one thing that we never see is that we never actually like build off it, whereas 20 by 20 seems to be in plan that you will build off it. So like once this is done, you're ready to go for 2021, 22, 23, like, and so on, like, yeah. You know,
well, I think what I liked about this campaign is, and I was, you know, worked really hard behind the scenes with Heather and Sarah, because I wanted to make sure, like, that, you know, women in sport, in terms of, you know, having these campaigns, you start off and then it just dies a death because there's no momentum to it, that we have different chapters in the campaign. This is chapter two. There's going to be a few more chapters after this, and it's going to be structured and strategic. And I think it's important that it does actually continue to keep it being people's mind's eye. And that's what I liked about the Sport Ireland Women in Sport policy that was brought out on Thursday, because that speaks to an awful lot of the 20 by 20 pillars. Because the very premise of the 20 by 20 campaign, simply because we don't have any funding, we don't have any money to give to NGBs or to individuals, is that we want to increase the visibility of women in sport. We want to create a social movement. We firmly believe that if you increase visibility of women and girls in sport, and what I mean by visibility is, you know, radio, print media, social media, that will enthuse and maybe inspire people to get involved in sport, and also maybe enthuse and inspire people to actually attend games and events as well.
I was saying it like to one of my bosses in the Irish Times. I was joking with him. I was like, there's like three things that I definitely want. I was like, obviously, I want to go to like a like an international tournament for like women in sport. And he was like, grand. And I was like, man, the other thing I want to see like ultra fans at women football matches. Like, I mean, as cool and all as it is to see like the young girls like pointing and be like, oh, I want to be her when I grow up. Like, I want to see, like, I remember like 2 years ago, I think Lyon were playing in a Champions League, maybe like quarters or something like that. And the Lyon ultras follow them on the train. So like behind the train, you just saw like a bunch of girls walking, flares and stuff going off behind them. Like, in my head, I was like, this is what I want.
Yeah,
I don't want anyone to be like booed and heckled and like called anything, but like I just want like this, like more of like a culture, I suppose, to be created more
absolutely
than anything else.
That's it. It's actually a culture change. Yeah. We want to try and create a new norm. So when you're talking about sport, it doesn't make a difference what gender they are. You know, we want women and girls to be valued and championed for being technically good at what they do. And like, that's it. Exactly. We want to have this new norm. We want the ultras to go to, for want of a better word, to go to a soccer match for men as for women. It just wouldn't be a difference. And to try and create that new norm, it's not going to happen over the next 18 months, which is the link to this campaign. But what we're trying to do is create a platform for something else to follow this, to actually push on the agenda again. And it's 51% of the country is female. So we all have a responsibility. And the big thing I said when I came out as, you know, with this campaign was, I don't want it to be about women for women. It's all of society for the benefit of all of society. So it's about young boys and girls seeing themselves as equal in terms of their opportunities to participate in sport.
I don't know if you saw it, but like, I think maybe last year, one of the Arsenal women's football players, she obviously, like, you know, she's not as paid as like Mesut Ozil or anyone else, but like she was in like a nice estate. I remember, as my friend called it, and he was saying that a bunch of young lads called up. And they were like walking around, and they were looking for someone to play football with. And they knocked on her door, not knowing who she was. And they were like, would you like to play football with us? And she went outside and she played football. And I remember then like 2 weeks later, he said they actually walked back to her house with her jersey and was like, can you sign like my jersey and things like that? And I was even saying like small things like that, you know, even like you don't want to be like all boys to be like wearing just like really random girl jerseys. But you still want them to be like, you might have like, say, Lionel Messi on one end, but you could also have like, you know, a Tony Duggan or even like an Anya Garman or, you know, someone like that.
Absolutely.
Like.
And a lot of sports now are actually taking the women or the ladies out of their club name. So for instance, Derry City have done it. They've taken out men's football, women's football. Motherwell have done it in England. I'm going over to Harlequins Rugby Club on the 30th of March for their game changer day. And they want parity in that club for both women's and men's. At the moment, obviously there's a difference between the pay structure there, because obviously men's rugby is professional, but everything else, they want parity. And, you know, it's inspiring to see them. And they actually contacted me about the 20 by 20 campaign because they're inspired by that and they want to come on and support her. So it's gone beyond just the Ireland of Ireland. It's over in England now as well. I've had requests from Australia and New Zealand and from France. So it's fantastic that it is reaching. And even the one thing that was really I wasn't wanted to try and achieve, Joanne, was I didn't want it to be a Dublin-centric campaign.
Yeah.
I wanted to reach the grassroots throughout the country. And I was really pleased yesterday to see RT News report that on Inishman and the Aran Islands, that the school out there had taken it on, and that 40 of the girls in the secondary school are going doing the Inishman Ironman.
Yeah.
And under the 20 by 20 banner. And like, that's inspiring for me. That's like, oh, that's fabulous. Like, you know, just for the pure innocence of it all, it's just perfect. It's great.
I suppose, you know, we're kind of going to wrap up now, but I suppose two things I want to ask you is, obviously 2019, 2020 is a big year. What sporting events should we particularly look out for, and what should we, who should we keep our eye out for, you know, for the next few years?
I think
putting you on the spot there.
Yeah, I think for me this year, and I'm hoping to do it, is I want to go and see a lot of the World Cup, the Women's World Cup in France.
World Cup final sold out in 30 minutes.
I know, yeah.
Record, yeah.
I want to go see Thunder. I'd love to go see England, Scotland and Nice in the women's, because obviously that local derby in Nice in France. I'd like to go and see that. I think there's so many athletes out there that are emerging. Obviously the likes of the Phil Healy's, Kieran McGeehan having won last week, but in, like, Lydia Boylan winning in the cycling as well. Obviously, you know, the easy thing for me to say is the All-Ireland Camogie and Ladies football finals. But for anybody listening, you know, I would say your own area, look out what's going on in your own area. Like, there's, you know, there's, I'd give the example of, you know, Cork City is a fabulous football club here, but they have, you know, the female side of the house. So if you're a Cork City fan for one, you should be a Cork City fan for both. And it's actually about going out and supporting sports in your own local area, whatever sport it is, you know. I think that would make a difference for people. But look, there's so much, just like, obviously the World Cup in Japan, I'm not going. I'd love to go. My finances don't
France instead.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to that, actually. It'll be a bit of an adventure. But look, there's so much sport out there. You know, we can be entertained by sport and we can support sport and we can follow sport. So it's actually just about, you know, opening your eyes and seeing what's out there.
And I suppose the last question then is, how can we like sign up? How can we like push this agenda even further forward? Obviously, you know, like putting up results on print media, you know, talking about it here in the radio, you know, different things like that. Like I got this podcast to produce a women in sport kind of agenda.
Yeah.
Agenda sounds dramatic, but you know what I mean?
No, yeah.
So how else can we all help, you know?
I think it's like, you know, that's the beauty of social media. People give out about social media and, you know, I use it from a work point of view, but it's very simply, if you're going to an event or a match or result or a game, it's actually that you'd post the result up on your phone or that you might put up a picture of you being at a women's game, because you can be a citizen journalist in that way and actually raise the profile. I would ask female athletes, players, to actually don't be afraid to be assertive and to put yourself out there and say, yeah, do you know what, I'm really good at what I do and this is a sport I play.
Are we a bit awkward, like Irish people?
Women in particular were so humble. And
like,
it's,
I was at the Women's Rugby World Cup and I remember the Americans were like chanting, sending like snaps to all their friends, and I was sitting there going, I'm mortified to even take a photo of the pitch. Like,
And that's it. And I think our female athletes, like, they're stars, but they're very humble and they need to be small but more assertive, because they need to tell their story. Because if they tell their story, young players and young girls will be inspired by the story, and boys as well. So we need to actually get them to be a small bit more assertive about what they're doing and actually for them to be rewarded as well. But very simply, if you're a woman or a man involved in sport, that you would get involved in female sport as a coach, as a referee, that you'd go to see sports as well. So those three pillars that we have, visibility is throughout them all. If you're at a game, you know, that's visibility. If you're actually participating, that's visibility. If you're obviously covering it, that's visibility. So it's actually about just getting involved, and it doesn't need to be a massive change, just two or three small things that you can do in the year to support women and girls in sport.
Mary, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I'm glad after like decades we finally got to meet, and now we're meeting
Likewise.
Non-stop. So thanks for everything obviously that you do for women in sport, and keep up the good work. So thanks for having us.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you. Thanks very much for tuning in, and thanks very much to Mary for giving up her valuable time. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and tune in every Friday at redextra.ie. And don't forget to follow us at Big Red Bench and at JoanneOR_OX. Next week, we'll be talking to Orlinny Carnig and Aoife Cassidy, who'll be presenting the new TG Cahir series, Manaw Sport Creus Anam, where they look at women in sport and the dedication that women have to do in their respective fields. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.